Today on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, an award-winning guaranteed Irish company. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Today on RTE Radio 1, text 51551.
British journalist and broadcaster Ian Dale edited a book back in 2021 called The Prime Ministers, a collection of essays, each written by a different historian, politician or journalist, on the 53 men and 2 women who had held the office of British Prime Minister. Then he did American presidents, followed by British kings and queens, and last year one on dictators, at which point he was thinking about doing French presidents or German chancellors next, but a light bulb moment led him to say, hang on, look at the shenanigans and the drama of the 16 people who have been Taoiseach. And the book that has come out of that, The Taoiseach, A Century of Political Leadership, has just been published. Ian Dale joins me now. What was the light bulb moment, Ian?
Well, it came a long time before that, because I was watching a thing on Netflix called Rebellion, all about the Easter Rising. And I suddenly thought to myself, why don't I know more about this? Why don't I know more about Irish history and politics, given that we speak the same language, so basically nations that have been intertwined in the past?
We have been asking ourselves that question in this country for quite a while
I think I'm one of the few people in England who asked the question. So I then started reading up on Irish politics, and I'd followed it a bit. I was following your general elections because they were always quite interesting. And then I thought, I asked a lot of people involved in politics, well, what do you know about Ireland? And none of them knew anything. So I thought, okay, well, let's think about doing a book. Could we find a publisher to do this book? No. We asked all of the Irish publishers, and they said, oh, no, there's no interest in political biography in Ireland. And I thought, what? And apparently only 3 of the Taoiseach have actually written their own autobiographies.
Unlike in your country, where it is practically a solemn duty once you have left number 10 to do it.
So I thought, well, that's really weird. Anyway, I was having a chat with a British publisher about another book. And I said, don't suppose you'd be interested in doing one on Irish prime ministers, would you? And they said, yeah, we probably would, actually. So well done to Swift Press for taking a punt. And it's worked, because I think the pre-sales for this to all the different bookshops in Ireland have been absolutely massive.
Well done for you as well, frankly, on explaining Ireland to Britain. There's a little bit of a vogue for it now. There's quite a lot of podcasts that are straying into this territory. But you were first.
Well, I mean, I did wonder, being a Brit doing this book, whether I might get a bit of pushback from people in Ireland, thinking, well, why isn't someone in Ireland doing this? And I thought, well, they could have done, but they haven't. And it is remarkable that there hasn't been a book looking at all of the different ones going back to 1922.
Or even more pertinently, that there hasn't been one done by somebody who has the benefit of being an outsider and bringing a different view, because we all know what we think in this country of our various
Taoiseachs. Well, bear in mind, I haven't written the book. I've edited it. So I put together a collection of 16 different academics, historians, journalists, politicians, each taking on a different Taoiseach, one that they're either really interested in or they have some expertise in. So if you're going to ask me a question, Philip, and what do you think of Sean Lamassa's decision in 1965 to do X, you'll get a pretty dusty answer. But obviously I've read all the essays like probably more than a dozen times, but I'm not sitting here pretending to be an expert.
No, but you've still formed opinions and views, I'd have to imagine. Let's just talk about your opinion of the role of the job itself and how it differs from other prime ministerial roles.
Well, in a sense, it is similar to the British Prime Minister. I was going to say similar to the French Prime Minister. I'm not quite sure that's true. It is the head of government. You are seen by some people as sort of a quasi-dictator in the fact that, well, if the Taoiseach doesn't agree with it, it's basically not going to happen. And I think when you look at the role of the office of the Taoiseach, it's developed in a very similar way to number 10 Downing Street.
Well, I was just going to say there will be those who would say that what we did was we copied your system and we gave everybody Irish titles.
But that's quite natural in a way, isn't it? I mean, if you look back in history and see where the whole Irish political system developed from, of course there are going to be similarities. Why wouldn't there be? But I think the interesting thing is when the Taoiseach's office was first formed, there's only like 20 people in it. And it wasn't the sort of dominant office that it is now, where you've obviously got a huge staff. And it's the same in number 10. If number 10 isn't behind a particular policy or initiative, it basically isn't going to happen. All the big media interviews have to be cleared through Number 10. I'm not quite sure whether that, I suspect that's fairly similar here. There's much more of a centralisation of the system of government.
We did have, we set down the role really as being a kind of a clearinghouse for the work of government to be gathered in the one place and inform what was going to happen in cabinet.
Yeah.
And that the role of Taoiseach, the prime ministerial role, really was primus inter pares at the very start. That was where we kind of differed from you though, wasn't it?
I think, well, the Prime Minister in London is the First Lord of the Treasury and the Chancellor is the Second Lord of the Treasury. So the Prime Minister has always been, this whole phrase first among equals, does that really work? It's not really equals, or it certainly isn't nowadays. It may have been in the past. When Sir Robert Walpole became Prime Minister in 1721, and he lasted 21 years, he was the first one to be called Prime Minister, and he didn't like it. He regarded it as an insult. And it was only codified in, I think, 1906. So it's comparatively new in terms of the actual formal office.
Right. Now, you know how this process works. We've got to generate a little bit of artificial outrage in order to make people buy the book and have arguments over the Christmas dinner table having read it. Which of these 16 men were you most impressed by?
I think Sean Lemass, probably, of the older ones. I mean, De Valera, I mean, he is one name that everybody in Britain knows. But probably if you said, well, give me one fact about De Valera, they would say, well, he didn't support us in the Second World War. That would be a sort of typical answer you'd get. But I think Sean Lemass was the father of modern Ireland in a way. He tried to revamp the economy, introduced lots of different economic reforms, which, I mean, nowadays may seem quite quaint and old-fashioned, but in those days were seen as quite radical. And although he wasn't one of the longer-serving Taoiseach, I got the plural.
Well
there.
Done, yeah, that's impressive.
He, I think, still has a huge effect on sort of modern-day politics, in the same way that De Valera does, to be honest, as well.
Okay, how? Because the view of Sean Lemass now would be, yes, he was a moderniser, he was an industrialist, but he was also, by 2025 standards, something of a Victorian.
Well, you could say that about all of the sort of the first batch of Taoiseach, I suppose. It was only really when I think you got to the likes of Jack Lynch and Liam Cosgrave, and then the ones that succeeded them, that you really got the flavour of modern Ireland. And I remember my first trip to Dublin in 1994. I came to the Eurovision Song Contest, the one that where Riverdance was first. Mm. In fact, I was one of the first people ever to see Riverdance. Amazing. I remember thinking that Dublin was a little bit like Cambridge at the time, which is where I grew up. Architecturally, just sort of the same kind of academic atmosphere.
Sorry, what parts of Dublin did you see that were like Cambridge?
Oh, believe me, there are some different parts of Cambridge too. And you talk to people, and there seemed to be a very different sort of social attitude, very conservative. And in Britain, we had sort of started our sort of liberalisation process, I think, a bit before. But you look at Ireland from 1994 and compare it to today, and it is almost like two different countries, I think. And I mean that I don't mean that in a sort of disparaging way to the sort of previous Ireland at all. I just think it's really interesting to see how, in a comparatively short time, Ireland has become a much more sort of liberal democracy, particularly obviously on social issues. I mean, who would have thought that one or two of the referenda would have been passed in the way that they were? So I think it's just been fascinating to watch this.
So Sean Lemass is the most remarkable from the earlier period. Then when you look at the more modern period, what is your cutoff point for that? Is this the 1970s onwards or later?
Yes, I think so. And there have been some very interesting characters. I mean, Charlie Hockey, obviously, is one of the most fascinating from a British point of view for all sorts of different reasons. I mean, the fact that he became Taoiseach only 10 years after being accused of being part of the gun-running plot, I mean, that's quite remarkable. His relations with Margaret Thatcher, I mean, worth a book on their own, really. Mm. She rather liked him to begin with. She kind of liked the roguish element that he had. But because of what he did during the Falklands War, their relationship never recovered from that. And he tried to get the European Economic Community to lift sanctions on Argentina, for example. Well, she never forgave him for that. And yet, only a year afterwards, she signed the Anglo-Irish Agreement with Garrett Fitzgerald. Sorry, 2 years afterwards. And that was only a year after the Brighton bomb as well. So I think she started off not really knowing much about Ireland at all, but as her premiership went on, became actually quite fascinating.
And I have to say that Gary Murphy's essay about Charlie Haughey is probably, well, I haven't finished reading the book yet, in fairness to everybody else. I know, I'm doing 75% of the interview that I should be. But Gary Murphy's assessment of Charlie Haughey is one of the better, fizzier and more balanced essays in there, because such a complex figure for us to address. Excuse me. To your mind, what kind of a job do you think Gary did?
I think he's done brilliantly, because he's written a real doorstep of a biography of Charlie Haughey. And to reduce that down into, what, 5,000 words, quite a talent, actually. Because I've just published a short biography of Margaret Thatcher, and I found it much more difficult to write a short book than a long one. So, and all of these essays are 5,000 or 6,000 words long, apart from De Valera, which David McCulloch has done. That is much longer for obvious reasons. They've all done, I think, a fantastic job.
Now we're going to get you to stray into dangerous territory. Of the 16, who do you think is the least impressive or least remarkable?
Well, I've got to be careful here, because we've got the book launch tomorrow night at Hodges Figures Bookshop.
You have to appear in public.
Well, some of the relations of the different Taoiseach are coming. But I think that probably John Costello, possibly.
John A. Costello, yeah. Why?
I mean, Charles Lycett has done the chapter on that, and I think he was a very honourable man, but didn't come into it with any great political ideology. I don't think he was almost a reluctant Taoiseach. He was almost sort of asked to do it, didn't particularly want to. And I just think the economic situation at the time didn't count in his favour, and it's difficult to think of many achievements.
It's funny that the impression that I have, having read 75% of the book, is that the two candidates here that promised so much more than they were actually able to deliver were both Charlie Haughey and Garrett Fitzgerald, the back-to-back Taoiseachs, because they got so mired in politics and they weren't able to achieve that much. Can I move us on, though, because we don't have that much time left, to the fact that these are all 16 men.
Yeah.
From your point of view as an outsider, does it diminish the role if we don't find, given that we first elected a female president back in 1990, that if we don't manage to elect a woman to this office, does it further diminish the role and that growing disconnect between people and politics?
Well, I don't think it diminishes the role, but it is. I had dinner with four of the contributors on Saturday night, and I actually asked them, so are there any TDs that you think, apart from Mary Lou McDonald, have a real chance of becoming Taoiseach? And they all agreed that there was no one in Fianna Fáil, really, that they could think of. Fine Gael TD, Jennifer...
Carol McNeill.
That's the one. They thought she was the most likely one, apart from Mary Lou McDonald. And I think it's so interesting looking at what happened in the presidential election and all of the amount of votes that Catherine Connolly actually got, because people now think, could there be a left-wing alliance? But I can't really see that happening with all the different sort of fragmented parties involved. But if Sinn Féin managed somehow to get all of those on board for a future general election, I mean, it's possible to see Mary Lou McDonald becoming Taoiseach, but the way the electoral system works, I can't imagine her going into coalition with either of the two big parties, because her main selling point at the next election surely will be, well, I'm not one of the other two. They've been governing you for 100 years, and there was a bit of that in the last election. So if she can get that messaging right, she's got a chance.
You drew a distinction between the presidents of the first half of that 100 years and the second half. I wonder, is one of the things that has changed the most how Taoiseach have to deal with the media, and that those of the first half had a pretty easy way, yeah, a pretty easy ride of it in terms of how they were able to present themselves. Not so any longer.
No, it isn't. And I think that is, it's the same in most countries now. If you're not any good on the media, you're not going to last very long. I think in Britain, if you think back to Clement Attlee, the Prime Minister after the war, after Churchill, I mean, there is no way that he would have become Prime Minister in today's politics. You've got to be able to cope with the 24/7 media. You've got the new Conservative leader in Britain, Kemi Badenoch, who a lot of people are saying, well, she's got to learn a lot of lessons from Margaret Thatcher's period in opposition. But Margaret Thatcher probably did 5 interviews a year. Well, if Kemi Badenoch doesn't say something every day, she's accused of being lazy. So there are so many more different challenges for a modern day political leader, and particularly if it's somebody who's not particularly well known in the country, they've got a real challenge.
The book, The Taoiseach, A Century of Political Leadership, edited by Ian Dale, published by Swift Books, is on sale now?
It's in all the bookshops in Ireland, I'm told. Or should be, anyway.
It is the material or the content of many a row at the Christmas dinner table, I think. Could be essential reading.
Absolutely.
Ian Dale, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Today on RTE Radio 1.